NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Try to get by Benning. Darnell Nurse left it in the corner. Gets up center. Perry scores. Corey Perry.
Well, you're able to shake away from Solani. It's given away to Solani around the front. Score! Teemu Solani with the steal.
Three in the fans score. Score! Off the floor. On the floor. Paul Kariya.
All right. We are finally back. Hockey is back. Ducks hockey is back. And what a night to open up with. A 4-1 victory against the Winnipeg Jets. And big highlight of the night is Mason McTavish gets his first NHL goal. But before we get into it and break down the game, I am here, as always, with Steven. How's it going?
I don't know, man. I don't.
Didn't expect this tonight, eh?
I did not at all. Like, I can only assume what happened tonight is the final game of preseason, and nobody told us. That was a blast. That was a blast. That was fun. That was a hell of a first game back. You know, especially for what we expect tonight, notwithstanding, to be a long season. It's nice to have something kind of like that, like right off the jump.
Yeah, and I mean, I joked before the game that, you know, Cole Perfetti was making his NHL debut for the Jets, so that guarantees he's going to score because everybody scores in their debut against the Ducks. But it was nice to see it, and I think we talked about this on, I don't know if it was the mailbag episode we did or the season preview, but if McTavish plays on opening night, the chances of him having a good game or scoring, or same with Grew, were just seemed high because every time the Ducks opened a season with a new player on the roster or a young player, they seem to just score in their debut. And I think we referenced Comtois, but man, McTavish doing what he does best early on didn't look out of place. The goal he scored is in the area where you expect him probably to score most of his goals, right in front of the net, picking up a rebound, picks up a secondary assist on the power play goal Adam Henrique, who tipped in Fowler's shot. Mm-hmm. Just a very solid debut from Mason McTavish, and one, I guess, that he didn't expect to even play in today because Max Jones was supposed to play and then was out due to a non-COVID-related illness. So what a way to come into the game. I think there was an interview that Ali Lozov did with McTavish during the first intermission and asked him where was he when he heard the news that he was playing today. He said he was in the bathroom when he heard from Dallas Eakins that he was going to play. So going from not knowing you're playing in the bathroom before the game to basically being, outside of Gibson, the Ducks' best player tonight.
Yeah, I mean, between this and, what was it, 2 years ago, or 3 years ago now, I guess. Oh, my God. The St. Louis defenseman talking to coach in the bathroom saying, put me in, and he scored a goal that night. Like, I think I might have to start hanging out in bathrooms if I want to get a good job or something, man.
Yeah, seriously.
It was great, man. It was nice to see from McTavish, you know what I mean? We talked about this where it was going to be about seeing if he's able to use his body and his physicality to kind of help him play well and like fit in at the NHL level. And he seemed to do it tonight. I mean, there was a hit early in the game that he made that it was one of those typical pull up, finish your checks, just, you know, 60-70% hits when you're forechecking, and you heard it. And it was just, there haven't been a lot of guys with the goal scoring upside or the offensive upside that McTavish has that also hit like that coming through Anaheim in a while. So, you know, it's nice to see that he seemed to be comfortable being aggressive.
He broke the Nick Ritchie curse pretty early on, the number 37, and he ends up, the way he played today, he shedded that that curse pretty quick, which was nice.
He looked great, man. Like, he just kind of played frenetically. Like, I'm just going to jump way ahead of everything right now and just say, like, you know, if we get Shane Wright, the idea of putting that version of McTavish on Zegras' wing, man, that rocks.
Yeah.
That sounds like so much fun, because those two, I think, would just play off each other phenomenally well.
Yeah, and for McTavish, too, like, he's not Zegras where you're expecting every time he has the puck on his stick that something magical is going to happen. But he just made good, smart plays. And from what we've read on McTavish and from what we've heard, that's kind of what you expect. I mean, physically, he's ready. He played against pros in the second division in the Swiss League last year. And we know, and he's talked about how much that's kind of prepared him to be an impact player, try to be an impact player for the Ducks this year. So you kind of expect him to come in and be comfortable and look like he belongs. And he did that. And he did all the little things right. And that, you know, at the end of the night, rewarded him with a goal and an assist. And he made some really good plays on both ends of the ice. He got some time, obviously, on the power play on the Ducks' second unit where he picked up the secondary assist. And he got some time on the penalty kill, too, which was a bit surprising. You know, we knew Benoit Olivier Grew was going to be on the penalty kill. That's where he's made his bread and butter throughout his junior career and even in the AHL last year with San Diego. So that was expected. But McTavish just kind of getting used in all areas, which for a guy, like we said before, heading into this game, didn't expect to even play today. It was nice to see him get sprinkled in a bunch of different situations and really show what he can do.
Here's the thing I'll say about McTavish that I think is important is he made his debut tonight, Bo Gruhl made his he was in the lineup tonight. He looked great, and it still took us 10 minutes to get to him because McTavish looked so good tonight. And it wasn't an overwhelming good, like you said. He just did a lot of simple things, but he didn't look out of place. He used his body to an advantage, and he kept his game really simple, and it helped. It was effective. You know, it was funny. I was watching it and thinking about coaching and just how that affects it. And I wonder sometimes to what degree coaching at the lower levels is the most important. And I'm sure that this is something that everybody knows, and I'm just an idiot. But, like, when you think about learning the basics and players having success and, like, Comtois being a straight-line player and McTavish being a straight-line player tonight, like, there's more to their games than that. They're more skilled than that. But in the moments where they're stepping into the NHL for the first time and they're still trying to establish themselves as an everyday player, having those kind of basics and fundamentals, like style of play things drilled into you, I think it shows. I think it shows, you know, he was disciplined. He was aggressive. Bo Gruhl looked wonderful tonight. He was all over the place. It was great.
Tough assignment for him too, right? Like playing on the fourth line with Delorier and Grant is not an ideal spot to make your debut, but for what he was given tonight, I think he did well. There were some mistakes early on, and a lot of guys looked shaky throughout the entire game. Like, the Ducks didn't play great tonight, but they came out with a 4-1.
No, they got their asses.
Yeah, they came out with a 4-1 win, so you can't complain. But as the game went on, I felt like Grew came into his own. You know, the first penalty kill was a little bit shaky. He didn't really, you know, step up on the opposition. He kind of shied away from contact, and that's to be expected. I mean, you're playing against a very good Jets team, you know, their top power play unit. It's your first couple shifts in the NHL. It's going to be tough. But I think as it went on, he made some really smart plays. He intercepted the puck. He played very well shorthanded, which is to be expected from him. And then I think he contributed at 5-on-5 every now and then. But again, it's a tough assignment for him to be out there on the fourth line. He's not going to be able to – he's not a player who generates offense that much on his own to begin with. And then to say, okay, now you're gonna you know, play off of these guys. You're going to play off DeLaurier. You're going to play off Derek Grant. That's tough, right? Like, that's tough for him to get things going offensively. But all things considered, I agree with you. I think he had a good game. It's overshadowed by McTavish having 2 points and Lindstrom having such a great game and Silverberg having 2 points as well and Drysdale getting on the board. But I think for what you expect from a player like Grew, I think he could be a guy that can contribute for 40 or 50 games this year and be a really good, responsible two-way player for the Ducks.
Absolutely. It's, you know, it's like you said, like, he's not going to be driving, you know, offense at the NHL level. He's got the talent and the, you know, kind of smarts, I guess, to, like, be able to be an effective offensive player. And there will be, you know, if he develops and all that kind of stuff, all the caveat crap, like, you know, he has offensive upside and to be an effective player in offense. But he is going to be a player that makes his bones playing 200 feet and doing things on the penalty and on the penalty kill and things like that, just playing really smart. And, like, you know, like you said, he kind of was out there on his own with D'Lo and Grant. Like, that's not great. He's going to be playing with better players than that, either contextually when he's down in the AHL or actually when he moves up into a top kind of nine role like we kind of expect. Like, he does look like a guy who can be a really good third line center. So it was good to see from him, I think. Kind of just everything that was going on with the team tonight was nice. Like we said, they got their asses kicked. But I think the thing that makes the difference is the power play, right? Like, those two power play goals completely change the dynamic of the game. Like, if it's just a 2-1 game, Winnipeg isn't pressing at certain times. They're not pulling the goalie 3 minutes out, like, or five, you know, three minutes out. Like, there's just things that are a little bit different. And that is the benefit of a bad/young team like Anaheim. Having a power play that can be effective is it can act as a way to take some of that pressure off the team at 5-on-5 when you know you can produce with the extra man. And, you know, I think we talked about it last year that this was what it was going to look like if this team was going to win a lot of games.
Yeah.
Or win any games, was they were going to get their asses kicked at 5-on-5. Gibby was going to play well enough to keep them in it, and they were going to need the power play.
It helps you win games.
They literally got all of that tonight.
Yeah, it helps you win games you shouldn't, right?
And, yeah, and, absolutely. And, it's an equalizer.
Yeah, and, you know, in the sense here, obviously John Gibson played really well, and a lot of people in the chat are mentioning that. Like, this, you can't sustain this throughout the entire season. We've seen this before where John Gibson will have a great start to the season, but the Ducks will play game and game and game after game like this, and it'll be, you know, eventually you'll overwork him. So you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself, but there are things, encouraging signs that things could change here, like the fact that the Ducks were able to responsibly hold on to a lead in this game and effectively close out a game, which are things that we haven't really seen from them in the last couple of years that they've been able to do. And then, like you said, the power play contributing on this game, if that can be, you know, something that's consistent this year, where it's at least, you know, around the 15 to 20 rank instead of dead last in the league, that will help them win some of these games that they would have lost last year. You know, take some pressure off John Gibson. You know, one thing that flies under the radar tonight again is the penalty kill was 100%. You know, they were giving the Jets a lot of opportunities to get back in the game, but the penalty kill kept the Ducks in it. And again, that's a lot on John Gibson and some of the saves that he was making as well. But you have to give credit to some of the units that were out there. I think they did play very well, and they limited the opportunities, or at least the grade A chances that the Jets were able to get. So it was a good start, all things considered. The Jets are going to be a top team in the Western Conference. This was always going to be a tough game to go into, even without Mark Scheifele in the lineup for the Jets. But I think this is how the Ducks are going to win games this year. And, you know, without Zegers really having an impact on the game, they were still were able to find 4 goals and come out with a pretty solid victory in opening night. So you can't really complain about too much that went on, because we know they are going to get outchanced in a lot of games this year, and the analytics aren't going to be pretty. And there's going to be games where they don't, you know, technically deserve to win, but they come out with the victory. And that's what you want to see. You want to see some fight. You want to see some effort. You see guys sticking up for the young players. You know, Shattenkirk comes in and takes on DeMello for kneeing Mason McTavish. You see the guys swarm Andrew Kopp a couple times for his rush on John Gibson. It's early, it's one game, but there's a different feel about this team. We'll see if that continues, but I hope so. It's encouraging signs early on.
Well, here's the thing, right? I would be reticent to say that they did a good job closing this game out. I think, again, like, they had a little extra, like, they got two penalties, or they got two power play goals that gave them a lot of extra juice. And then Gibby was really good tonight because, as everybody's mentioning in the chat, it's not, you know, the end of December where he's had to do this 40 times. So, you know, I think you're right. Like, the underlying, like we talked about, right? The underlying numbers are going to be bad. They're going to get beat in a lot of ways over the course of this season. And what you're going to be needing to look for is going to be signs of improvement in little things here and there. The power play is a good example of that. Just the look of so much of these younger players, because as younger players, they're still going to be getting their footing. They're going to look out of place. And as the season progresses and they start to get more and more comfortable getting more and more ice time, you're going to see them make progress moving forward. You're going to see them develop into better players. But this is exactly what has to happen for them to win a game against a team whose defense isn't great and was missing their number one center. Like, yeah, they still have Kyle Connor and Blake Wheeler and Pierre-Luc Dubois, but, like, that defense, we talked about it, isn't good, isn't great, it's competent. And Connor Hellebuck's an incredible goaltender. They beat him four times tonight. That's not going to happen. So, you know, this was a great first game, and I think it very perfectly gave you everything that you're going to get this season. You know, but yeah, like, McTavish got 2 points, Lundstrom got 2 points, we got two power play goals. Like, who gives a shit right now? Yeah. Like, that's tomorrow's problem.
Exactly. I mean, we have to take the wins where they're going to come this year. And this was a positive start to the season, despite anything that comes after this. It's a great way to start the year, right? And you know, for McTavish not to know he was going to play, and for us being disappointed finding that out, I think, earlier today, that the chances are that he wasn't going to play, and then last minute for him to check in and have such a good game, and other guys step up and play well, and John Gibson to start the year strong. There's a lot of positives to draw from this, and there's still better days to come, because this wasn't Trevor Zegras' best game by any means. He didn't have a lot of opportunity to get on the ice with the amount of times the Ducks were on the penalty kill in this game. I think he only played about 13 minutes and 22 seconds, which was a few seconds more than Derek Grant played on the night, so it was tough for him to get out there on a consistent basis. And I felt like the Ducks babied him a little bit again, like we saw last year. It's one game, so I don't want to overreact and jump on that bandwagon just yet and say that, you know, they still have the kid gloves on him and they're still trying to take him out of certain opportunities or not play him in the defensive zone or late in games, especially games that they have, you know, a 2 or 3 goal lead. We'll have to wait and see, but the encouraging signs are is like when he does have the puck on his stick, he does make things happen, and he showed that in this game. There were a few flashes of brilliance from him, which you can expect, and you know going forward that is going to translate to points, and he's going to get on the board. And if the Ducks are able to scrape out a 4-1 win in this game from some individual brilliance from a few guys on the team, just wait until Trevor Zegras gets going and Maxime Comtois gets going and Troy Terry gets going and the guys that we're actually expecting to be on the board on a nightly basis get going. That will be encouraging signs, because I don't think, you know, Isaac Lindstrom is going to get 2 points a night for the rest of the year, right? Jakob Silfverberg's not going to be a consistent
60-point MVP Isaac Lindstrom.
But, you know, you need those guys to chip in for secondary scoring. We've talked about that a lot. The Ducks are going to need to get offense from Absolutely. A lot of guys. So it's nice to see them get going, because we know at some point, Zegras, Terry, Comtois, they're going to put up points. So for all these other guys to get off to good starts, it could align perfectly where, you know, they've got Minnesota on Friday, which is going to be another tough matchup. Zegras is going to break out at some point, so it'll be interesting to see when that happens. The one thing I do want to get to before we kind of dive in a bit more on Zegras is Max Jones, obviously, out with a non-COVID-related illness today. Where does he draw back in Friday? I know we had a question, I think it was from Barnburner in our chat here, on whether Jones draws back in. Let's just say he's healthy, he's feeling better, he's ready to go on Friday. Like, the obvious answer before the game would have been, okay, McTavish comes out and Jones goes back in. But I don't think there's any way you can take McTavish out for Friday at this point after the performance he had in this game. So you look at the roster, like, he would have to come in for one of the guys on the fourth line, you would think.
I mean, no. in a perfect world, yeah, like, D'Lo or Grant comes out and he drops in and, you know, you shuffle some stuff around and kind of see where you're at. But, like, in reality, like, maybe it's Gruel, but it'll likely, at this point, the thing that seems the likeliest to me is that he doesn't draw back in.
Maybe.
Like, at that point, right, I think that is. And if he does, what ends up probably happening is Gru comes out, Grant moves back to center, and D'Lo and Jones are the wingers for Grant, you know. But, like, you're right. McTavish and Gru both looked good enough tonight that they deserve to be in the next lineup. Whether or not that's going to happen, I don't know. But it would be really hard for this organization to come out of the gate preaching about accountability and merit and earning things and take out two of the four best players on the team tonight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they just looked really good. So I think the likeliest answer is Jones doesn't draw back in. If he does, maybe it's D'Lo.
That's what I was thinking, because we talked about this, I think, on the mailbag episode on what Delorier's usage could look like this year, where he comes in for the games against bigger physical teams like the Jets, where it makes sense to have a player like him in the lineup. I don't know if Minnesota necessarily qualifies as that team. I don't think they do. I would classify them as a bit of a smaller skill team now, the way they are. But, I mean, that's up to the Ducks coaching staff at this point. But I think if Max Jones is healthy, he should be in the lineup. If he's feeling better, if he's 100%. For me, I would rather it be Delorier or Grant that comes out. I would like to see Sam Steele back in. I would have no problem seeing a fourth line of Gru, Steele, Jones instead of Delorier and Grant playing at this point. Like, if you're going to commit to a rebuild, why not play all the players that you want to see get better and produce? Like, you know, no player is going to be happy about being introduced as a non-roster player. You could clearly see Sam Steele getting the intro tonight and not being super happy that he's not playing, and I'm sure he isn't. He shouldn't be. He wants to be in the lineup, and at some point he's going to get his chance, and you got to take it when you get it. But the performance from Isaac Lindstrom tonight doesn't bode well for Sam Steele, his future as a top nine center on this team, because Zegras isn't going anywhere and Getzlaff isn't going anywhere. So his real competition was Isaac Lindstrom. And I think outside of John Gibson, there's a real shout for Isaac Lindstrom being the second best player tonight. You know, it's him or Mason McTavish for me. And I thought Isaac Lindstrom did a lot of things well. We already know about his two-way game and how he can impact the game defensively, but offensively, he had a lot of things going for him. Picked up the primary assist on McTavish's goal, the secondary assist on the first goal. Just looked more engaged, and I really liked the look of McTavish, Lindstrom, Silverberg, because they're all three of them are kind of sneaky, good offensive players, but they are so defensively responsible that you can put them out in any situation. And I think Lindstrom kind of thrives with line mates like that. And this is a big year for him and for Sam Steele, with both of them opting for those one-year contracts when they accepted their qualifying offers. They're both playing basically for that third-line center spot and competing maybe with Benoit Olivier Group, but mostly with themselves. And like I said, when you get given those opportunities like Lindstrom got tonight, you have to take advantage of it, and he did. And that doesn't bode too well for Sam Steele. So whenever he checks back in, if it's Friday or some later on point early on in the season here, he's going to have a game like this if he hopes to stick around.
So, yeah. So first off, yes, you're 100% right that at this point he's competing directly with Lundestrom for that kind of third line spot. You know, you could kind of call it like a second and a half line, depending on how you look at the Getsy line and things like that. And he looked really good, and he made a lot. He made a good case for himself for him to be the favorite moving forward, right? And that's going to change on a game by game basis, and as we get more information as the season goes on. The question that I have with Steele is, if you need to bring in an outside forward, right? And you're looking at it and you're going, all right, we want to get a little bit more speed, maybe a little bit more skill, and a little bit more goal scoring. You call up Milano, you put Milano on a wing, and you feel like you've addressed that. A little bit more size, a little bit more forechecking. You can put in someone like Volkov. What are you telling yourself, your roster, Sam Steele? Like, what are you asking of him when you call him up, I guess is my question. Because at this point, I'm not sure he does anything well enough or consistently enough for me to know what I'm getting out of him when he comes up. Lundestrom seems to be two-way center with some offensive upside. You know, we know what Milano is. Volkov seems to either not be engaged all the time, you know what I mean, things like that. But, like, I guess that's my question to you is, what do you think Steele is at this point as far as inserting him into the lineup? What is he bringing?
Yeah, and I it's hard to say, honestly, in terms of what does he bring that the Ducks don't already have in their lineup. I don't necessarily think he brings anything different. At this point, he hasn't shown that, and that's why I think when he ever does get the opportunity, whether it's at center or at wing, like somebody just mentioned in the chat here, he's got to come out and show why he deserves to be in this lineup, because there are other guys in front of him that are now doing that. You know, even Benoit Levigrou, not on the score sheet, but he showed what he can do when he's in the lineup and be, you know, a mainstay on the penalty kill and be a good defensive forward and could really be that player who, I don't think he should be on the fourth line, but he can contribute on the fourth line, if you know what I mean by that. Like, I think he fits there for now. Sam Steele, I don't know if he does. I don't know if there's much he can provide, and that's up to him to show it at this point. I don't know. I hope he gets a chance, and when he takes that chance, he can actually show that he belongs here, because I still believe in him. But I jokingly put out a tweet tonight that, you know, the Rangers are shopping Vitali Kravtsov, who's a former ninth overall pick from them, and they're looking for, you know, potentially a similar type prospect in return. And we know how much Bob Murray loves his hockey deals. You know, why not do Sam Steele for Vitali Kravtsov? Because in that sense, I think Kravtsov does bring something to the Ducks lineup that they don't have. In a big kind of 6 foot, I think he's 6'4", over 200 pound, kind of grinding power forward who has some skill. I don't necessarily think they have that on the right side. Right, like they've got Terry and Raquel and Silverberg on the right side. I think bringing in a player like Kravtsov, you bring something different in. Not saying that the Rangers would be open to that or this is a trade that could happen.
Well, I got you.
But you get something different, and you get two players that could use a change of scenery. That I think Steele going to the Rangers, he gets an opportunity potentially to play center, to add something to that lineup that maybe they don't have, and then Kravtsov comes over here and potentially gets that here. And apparently he's open to playing in the AHL as long as it's not with the Rangers. So coming down and maybe playing with San Diego and getting some minutes down there with some of those guys and then getting a chance later on in the season. I mean, it's a trade I think makes sense for both teams. I would like to see something from Sam Steele before something like that would happen. Before we just give up on him completely, I think this is a make or break year for him. So a few, you know, 5 to 10 games for me just to see what he can do and see how driven he is this year would be something I'd want to see before that. But you know, at some point we're going to get to that decision-making point this year where we've seen enough of Sam Steele where we have to say, okay, is this a guy worth keeping around, or is he really not providing much at this point? Because you can't send him to San Diego. Like, I think he would get claimed on waivers even if he's not playing well. There will be a team that would take a chance on him. So you're going to, as the Ducks, you're going to get to that point where you can't healthy scratch him every game, because that's not doing anything for anybody, and you can't send him down. So what are you going to do at that point?
Yeah, I mean, there's two ways at this point, right? If you just kind of take what happened tonight, that Steele should, somebody slips, right? And maybe you go, all right, let's give him a game on the outside, let him catch their breath, whatever, right? Likely Grew, likely McTavish, something like that. The other one is he just is a healthy scratch for 7-8 games, and they just let him simmer and simmer and simmer, and then they go, all right, let's see. If you really want it, go get it, you know? And they throw him in there, and they give somebody a night off or something like that. Maybe it's a back-to-back or, you know, that kind of situation. And either way, when he gets in, he has to make something pop. Like, he has to do something, because, you know, there are just times where he just looks like a passenger. And, you know, I always try to preach patience with young guys, because I just think that first, you know, 200 games or so is just so much learning. But given how significant of roles he's played at the junior level, at the AHL level, you know, given the opportunities that he's been given at the NHL to be effective, to be consistently a center, you know, it's getting to the point now where, like you said, like, you have to start asking some questions about where it is and where he's at. And so, yeah, like, you know, I want all the Ducks draft picks to become heart candidates, right? Like, that's just what you want. So, like, I would love to see him get back in the lineup and show that kind of smart, heady, two-way game with a little extra playmaking that, you know, you kind of hoped you were going to get out of him. Like, I think that's great. And, like, you know, somebody said it in there, I'll say it 1,000 times more before we get rid of him. Put him on the wing. There's no reason not to put him on the wing. It makes too much sense. Moving smart centers, and I do think he's smart. I do think he does a good job of reading the game. I just don't know why it doesn't seem to click. I 100% think putting him as a third line winger just makes so much sense. Play him with Grew on the wing, and honestly, play those two as a penalty kill, and just watch him go crazy.
Yeah,
This is what this season is for, right, Ed? Like, it's going to be about asking questions and trying to get answers. One of the questions for the Ducks right now is, what the fuck is Sam Steele? And at the end of the day, only Sam Steele can answer that. But until he does, there's other guys who are going to deserve shots. You know, what happens if Perreault goes on a 10-game hot streak in the AHL and the Ducks are in the middle of, you know, one of those awful Januaries where they're on the road for half of it and they're, you know, losing 4 or 5 games in a row, or 7-9 or something like that. And they go, screw it, let's bring this kid up. Like, well, we got to waive somebody. All right, bye, Steele. Like, it just is what it is.
Yeah, he's coming to a point where not only at center position, but on the wing, there's a lot of players either in front of him that are performing or just behind him that could start pushing into spots in front of him. And that's not a good space for him to be in if he's not getting ice time. And if the ice time he does eventually get, he's not performing, right? And that remains to be seen. We're one game in here. Maybe he comes in on Friday. Who knows? Like, do you think he checks in on Friday against the Wild? Or do you think it's a while before we see him?
I think it'll be a couple. I would assume it'll be a couple games. If he was going to get back in, I think the Wild makes a lot of sense. I think, like you said, like, other than Jordan Greenway, I don't know that they really have anybody who kind of mixes it up
and
like that.
Foligno, and that's...
And right, well, it, yeah. Yeah, and Ryan Hartman. Like, Ryan Hartman's a feisty guy, but none of those guys are guys you need to, like, have a D-Lo around for.
Yeah, especially, like, if Jones is back too, right? Like, you can get
right,
that from
him. And
that's
the thing. One, Steele is second in line. Especially with the 3-year deal that this team gave Jones, like, they definitely believe in him. They definitely think he's going to be a member of this team moving forward. We saw Dallas Eakins preaching, you know, about just his ability to invigorate the lineup, to just create energy, create momentum or emotion in his teammates. Like, they were really excited about Jones coming into the season based on what he did in the preseason. And so I think, you know, Steele's second in line. And, like, yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me to roll out a fourth line of Jones, Grew, Steele against a quicker skill team like Minnesota. So I think that would make a lot of sense. I think they have every reason to do it. I think it's early enough in the season that you can say nobody has earned a spot. Everybody's still, you know, we're trying to figure out what our best 20 guys is every night.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's the Ducks, and I wouldn't be surprised if, despite McTavish's performance, if Jones is healthy, that McTavish doesn't play Friday and Jones just slots in at his spot, and then potentially Steele just comes in for Grew and centers DeLaurier and Grant on the fourth line. It's a scenario I could see being possible just for the way we've seen the Ducks handle their younger players and their roster in the past. Ultimately, like, what I would like to see is obviously McTavish stay in, Jones come in for one of Grant or DeLaurier, and then Steele comes in for Benoit, Olivier, Grew. That's what I think I would like to see the most. I want Bogre to play, and like, ultimately I would love to see a Jones, Grew, Steele lineup, but I just don't think that's the way they're going to go.
Yeah, probably not, because they hate us and they want us to be miserable. But yeah, dude, that would be a lot of fun. That would, that's one of the things, right? Is like, we really kind of need this organization philosophically to change the way that it looks at the best 20 guys every night, because I've said it a thousand times, the way the organization looks at the fourth line, you can't hold those guys accountable for holding the younger guys back. It's almost just three spots in the roster you just have to cross out. You know, Grew getting into that, I think, speaks more highly of Grew than it does anything else, that they trust him in that fourth line role, that they think physically he can take it, that they think his penalty killing upside gives him a reason to be in that fourth line role, right? To be in the game every night. And sorry, I lost my train of thought for a second. You know, and so it would be nice to see the organization start to change that bottom six into a more smart and skilled bottom six instead of a older physical bottom six. You know, I get all of the perks of having heavy players at the bottom of the roster. Like, I'm never a guy who's anti-Ryan Reeves or any of that kind of stuff. But it would really be nice, especially in a year where there are so many questions and only so much time to get answers, if they could put 12 guys on the ice every night that have upside and stop committing so much time to those bottom line guys. But they just don't seem to be willing to do that, and that is an organizational thing. I think to a significant degree Aikens agrees with that approach, but I do think that is a Bob Murray thing. And until Bob Murray gets, you know, a head trauma or he leaves, he's not going to change his mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I don't see that line coming together, a Grew, Steele, Jones line on the fourth line, as much as I'd love to. You know, we heard in the offseason about the interest in DeLaurier and teams apparently offering a first-round pick that never developed. I don't know how true that was.
I 100% think Bob Murray leaked that to defend.
Yeah.
Because that came out just before the expansion draft.
Mm-hmm.
I am 100% starting to think that he just leaked that to Elliott to be able to rationalize putting D'Lo on the protective
list. Yeah, the longer it goes on and he doesn't get moved, it becomes more and more clear that was something leaked from his end, likely. Before we move on to the...
Dude, that was D'Lo's camp.
Oh, could be.
Oh, no, 100%
could be. 100%. I mean, like, you look at the prices, like, guys like Barkley Goodrow and other guys were going for. Like, it didn't feel like it was out of the realm of possibility, but...
Yes, it did, Eddie. Shut up. You know, you heard that. You were like, who? What idiot? You were like, the first thing you did is Google what team Peter Chiarelli worked for. That's what you did.
Yeah, or the or if the Rangers needed another fighting guy, another Ryan Reeves type player.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I 100% agree that what we've seen with Reeves' perceived value around the league, guys like Coleman, guys like Gaudreau, hell, Brad Richardson still somehow manages to get jobs in this league. I agree that it's easy to say D'Lo's value moves up in the eyes around the league.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a first always felt a little pie in the sky. You know, I mean, any player is worth whatever you can get them for, and I don't think any of us have a high enough opinion of GMs collectively to say someone wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But the Ducks got him for a fourth, and they were panned for paying too much. So even if his value goes up, like, that's a third, right?
Yeah,
like,
I'd be happy with a third.
Overpay, and he gets better, you're looking at a middle third round pick, most likely.
The good thing with Delorie is, like, no matter, like, his play will never affect his value in the sense that, like, you know why teams would pay a third or second or whatever round pick to get him, because they want a player like that. An enforcer, an old school fighter. Like, that's why they would bring him in. So it's not like if he plays bad, that price is going to go down. No, because he's not going to put up points. Like, his value can really only go up from whatever the perceived value around the league is. So it's not like holding on to him is detrimental at this point. And I would keep him over Derek Grant, because at least he fills a role that the Ducks don't have in that sense, where Derek Grant, like, a while ago, they probably should have got rid of him. I think there's other players who can fill that role. I think, you know, I'd rather have a Sam Steele or Max Jones in the lineup over a Derek Grant, but
it's not even that. I'd rather have Carter Rowney.
Yeah,
Carter Rowney's a good hockey player.
I did not mind Carter Rowney. I mean, you can't re-sign him when it wouldn't have made sense for them to re-sign him just to bring him back to play with Grant and Delorier. But if I had to choose, it would have been Rowney.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. That's the thing, right? Because we do hear conversations about opportunity costs and about asset management, not all this crap that makes me want to, you know, gouge my eyes out. But that's the fact right there, is by bringing in Derek Grant, you make it harder and harder to keep a guy like Carter Rowney, who's actually the guy you keep pretending Derek Grant is.
Yeah, pretty much. Player on the penalty kill.
Yeah, if two of your four bottom line, right, because you figure that's a rotating spot, you know, D'Lo is in and out. D'Lo's probably going to play 40 to 50 games, but you can move guys around. Like, if two of your bottom four is Delorier, who's better than you think, given that he's, you know, an enforcer, and Carter Rowney, you're not doing too bad. You can play that line, you know, 8, 9, 10 minutes a night, and maybe you're all right. But having Grant out there, it drops it overall, because he's not good enough to make anybody a little bit better. And Carter Rowney, at least, with his ability to forecheck, his ability to, you know, cut passing lanes and things like that, like, he was better at making a guy like Delorier much more playable on a nightly basis.
One comment in the chat I want to get to is Raquel Scotie in the chat said, bold prediction that Grew is more valuable than Deneau within 2 years at their respective salaries. It's bold, but it's not. Like, if I had to pick, I hate player comps, but if I had to pick a suitable player comp for Benoit Levi-Grew, I think it would be Philip Deneau, and like the career trajectory that Philip Deneau has gone on, where as he's gotten into his later 20s, he's become a more kind of valuable and recognized player like he was for Montreal. Obviously, now he's in LA with the Kings. But I think what Deneau makes, like $6 million for the Kings, I think it is.
Yeah, I think six and a half.
So, you know, in 2 years, where, you know, if Benoit Levi-Grew is the third line center for this team, and is, you know, one of the better players on the penalty kill for them, is contributing shorthanded, is a guy who can put up 30 to 40 points. If that's what he's doing in 2 years, I think that prediction is viable. It's bold for sure, because you're hoping that Gru can continue on an upward trajectory after playing one game in the NHL, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. Like, that would be the closest player comp I would give for Gru is Philip Deneau.
So here's the thing that's interesting about that, because if you look at his last 3 years, were kind of Deneau's best years, or last three seasons, where he puts up 53 points in 81 games, 47 and 71, and then 24 and 53 last year. That's his 25 to 27 season. He's going to be 28 this year. And he has finished 7th, 6th, and 6th in Selke voting the last 3 years. And I think a lot of people would say that he probably deserved to be closer to 4.
He probably, there are some years he should have been probably top 3, but the name, he doesn't have the name.
He probably had a shot. He should have probably had a shot at being, like, if you told me last year the finalists were Couturier, Barkov, and Deneau, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That's your boy. Like, do you think Gru has just Selke adjacent? I'm not even saying, like, he's got to win it. I'm just asking, like, do you think he's skilled enough to move forward on a trajectory to be a guy kind of in that conversation?
It's tough because I don't think he'll do enough offensively, just like Deneau doesn't consistently, to be in that conversation, which is ridiculous that we're talking about the Selke and having to be better offensively to be in that conversation. But it's the way that award works. Usually it's the defensive centers that still contribute offensively. It's like an all-around award almost, rather than it being the best defensive center. It's a
most points by a penalty killer.
Yeah, essentially, right? And not to say Kopitar and Bergeron didn't deserve it for the times that they won it, and Kessler being nominated. Like, those are guys that deserve to be in that Barkov Couturier as well.
Yeah.
But I could see Gru in the mold of Deneau, where at the highest peak of his ceiling, if he reaches it, a guy who gets those shouts from the analytics guys, right? Like, gets into those 7th or 8th or, 6th, 7th, 8th kind of range of voting for the Selke Award. I could see it. It definitely within the highest range of his ceiling on what he could get to. He would have to be a 30 to 40 point guy at least. And then still be, the Ducks' top penalty-killing forward and one of, if not the best penalty-killing forwards in the league, just like Deneau is, to be in that conversation. Because to get up there, you have to be so much better defensively to make up for the difference in offense between guys like Couturier and Kopitar and Bergeron, right? Like, you have to have something else that sets you apart. I definitely think he could get there, but it is a long shot for him to reach that potential. But he definitely has the size, he has the smarts on the defensive end. He's shown at every level that he can be a very, very good player on the penalty kill and a shorthanded threat. So he has everything, all the tools to get there, right? It's just how much is that development going to continue on an upward trajectory, and where is he going to plateau before he gets to that level we're talking about?
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah. So, okay, I want to get your thoughts on Zegras and kind of the night he had.
Yeah.
So at what point, you know, I think it was like the third or fourth time he tried something slick going across the blue line. And let me just be very clear. I love it. I love to see him going for that. I think that's exactly what you want from him. You want that swagger. You want that cockiness. You want him to be like, no, I see you, you know, 28-year-old 500-game defenseman, and I'm going to make you look stupid right now. Like, that's the best. But I, you know, I made a comment on Twitter about, like, you know, Akins is going to walk up behind him and just kind of mention in his ear, like, simple. Like, just simplify it a little bit. And I don't think, you know, I don't think that that's a bad comment. I don't think that's an indictment of how he played. I think it is a reality of, you know, sometimes making simple plays allows you to kind of start to build up that confidence and that momentum, especially in a first game where your nerves are going to be high. But we saw Zegras make great passes. We saw him make lots of attempts at trying to create space and trying to create ice, or create space and create passing lanes with his stick and his vision. And what were your kind of big takeaways from Zegras tonight?
Yeah, I think he flashed, flashed brilliance throughout the night. Didn't have the opportunities you would like for a player like that to really take control of the game. You know, only played just over 13 minutes. The Ducks, I think, were shorthanded five times in the game, which took a lot of the air out of it for Trevor Zegras to really get going. And it was spread out, right? Like, it wasn't four penalties in the first period and then they had the full 40 minutes. Like, there were times where those penalties just kind of took the air out of the tires for them, and he didn't really get out there and get going. I think new line mates for him as well. You know, yes, he played most of the preseason with Raquel, but I think it was only one game in preseason he played with that line, with Raquel and Henrik, so that's going to take some time to gel. I would have loved to see him with Comtois and Terry to kind of see what they could do based off what they did at the end of last year. I think, depending on how things go for not only his line, but Getzlaff with Comtois and Terry, and how that goes over the next couple games here, we could see them eventually pivot back to a Zegras, Comtois, Terry, or just mix up the lines a little bit. Because outside of, I think McTavish, Lindstrom, Silverberg was the Ducks' best line tonight. The fourth line is the fourth line. It's going to be the one, like you'd mentioned earlier, that kind of rotates the most of the kind of the spare guys who are, or the Jones, the Steele, Grant, Grew, Delorier.
Don't put Jones in there. That's not fair. He doesn't deserve that, dude. He got sick.
At least for as long as, I guess, McTavish is up here. But I think it was a good game, all things considered, from Zegras. But there's more to come, and that could be Friday, that could be later on in the season. But at some point, there's going to be a game where the stars align and everything kind of works out that he can just take over that game, because he has that ability, and it's not going to take long. Like I said, he showed flashes of that in this game, and once he has a little bit more runway to get going and build that momentum in the game, he'll get to the point where he's just almost unstoppable in some games, and we saw that near the end of last year. So I'm not worried about him at all. I think once he can, get 15, 16, 17 minutes of ice time a night, get some more power play time as well. The Ducks had three or four power plays in this game, and they looked pretty good, and he looked good on those power plays as well. So he's going to get his reps, and he's going to get in there. So, it's just another thing. Like, I'm excited for Friday. I'm excited to see him again on Friday. Like, he, again, like, even with him not being the headlining guy, you ask anybody who they're most excited to see play on Friday, and Trevor Zegras is probably near the top of that list, even with the performance from Mason McTavish tonight and how well Lundstrom played. Like, Zegras is always going to be at the top of the list of Ducks fans and which player they're most excited to see play. So I think, there's going to be a game, whether, like I said, it's Friday or in the next few games here, where he breaks out and shows everybody, why he's a front runner for the Calder this year, and it will likely be sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think that, for me, that was the thing, right? Is like, as much as I, like I said, it was one of those things where you walk over and go, hey, you're in the right spot. Like, I get where you're at, but maybe just take that stuff down just a little bit. you know, get your confidence back, settle your nerves, do something, you know what I mean? That kind of stuff. Like, I think the fact that he was trying is huge. You know, he didn't look scared. He didn't look timid. He was aggressive. He was going at guys. You know, we saw that even in the last preseason game where he's going at guys. Like, he's taking the defense on. He is not trying to stay to the outside. He's not pulling up at the blue line. He's not dumping the puck in. Like, none of that. Like, he is puck on my stick. I know what I'm supposed to do. I have to make things happen. And I just see him play with that confidence, even if the results aren't necessarily there, even if those plays are getting broken up, to see him just keep going again and again with that, you know, that tenacity, that aggressiveness is awesome. Because like you said, there are going to be games where he's the best player on the ice for 60 minutes, like, and it's just not close. He seems to very much have that skill level and that talent level and that kind of belief in himself, where he can do that. And so just, you know, getting to watch him kind of work his way through that process this year is going to be really exciting, because there's going to be games where you look bad and there's games where you're going to think he's the greatest player you've ever seen. And it's going to be a blast.
Yeah, and it's the, you know, the process of getting that consistency where eventually he gets to that superstar level where almost on a nightly basis he takes over games. You know, that elite level when we're talking, you know, guys like McDavid and Draisaitl and MacKinnon and Matthews, where every night they almost make something happen every night, and it's surprising when they don't, right? Like, he has the potential to get to that level. And I think the most exciting thing about this season is just watching that development, right? In games, and even tonight, like we said, he wasn't great tonight, but he didn't let it get him down. And every time you saw him, whether it was on the bench or whatever, the confidence is still there. He's still talking to his teammates. He's still committed to making something happen out there. And that's what you love to see from a young player like that, especially such a skilled young player, is that, you know, no matter how he's playing, no matter how the game is going, he's going to go out every shift and play like it's his last. And he's going to make something happen. He's going to try and create offense for himself and for his teammates. And that's what we expect from him. And, you know, to put it plain and simple, as Jay Southern put in the chat, like, Zegras is just exciting. And that's what makes it so fun for us, is any night he could just pull off something crazy and just wow everybody. And that's why he himself almost makes the Ducks must-see TV at this point. And we didn't even mention, like, the defense, too. We have to get to them. Like, Jamie Drysdale picked up a point tonight. You know, very close to it being a goal for him, and how it always seems to be with him, which is not a bad trait for a defenseman. I'll get to that, you know, right off the bat here. Is his shots always seem to get tipped in, and the goals get taken away from him. I think, remember last year when his first NHL goal, we thought it got tipped by Jones, I think it was.
But yeah.
It ended up being his, and there was another goal of his that got tipped in, I think, by Henrique a few games later. And then obviously this one in the opening game tonight gets tipped in by Ricardo Kell. That's not a bad trait to have for a defenseman, to be able to, you know, pinpoint your, you know, forwards in front of the net and get it in areas where they can deflect it past the netminder. And Jamie Drysdale just seems to be able to put his shots in the right areas for that to happen. And it's not a bad trade to have him. And it's great to see him get on the board with a power play point and hit the first game of the season, because we talked about it in our season preview. If the Ducks' power play is going to get better, a lot of it, yeah, it does ride on Zegras and Comtois and Terry and the forward group. But ultimately, somebody is going to be the quarterback from the blue line on the power play, and it's going to be Jamie Drysdale. You hope it's going to be Jamie Drysdale. And I thought he looked calm, composed on the Ducks' power play. Obviously, the key playmaker on Henrique's goal in setting up the shot. So I thought it was a great game from him. I loved that Lindholm and Drysdale, that pairing was put together. You know, we briefly talked about that because Pat gave us that question in our mailbag episode on if they could be dominant this year. You know, analytically, they weren't great, but nobody was in this game. I thought of the pairings, they looked the best, and it wasn't really close. I don't think Manson looked particularly great this game. He looked a little rusty. Fowler was okay. And, you know, Shattenkirk scored, and I thought Pattern and Shattenkirk was actually not that bad. You know, on paper, it's the worst pairing they had, but I thought it was actually pretty decent tonight. But Drysdale and Lindholm were just kind of at another level, which is what you kind of expect.
Yeah, I mean, look, a couple things. First off, not a huge fan of the Pattern thing being in and all that kind of stuff. But that being said, I would rather see Mahura, I would rather see Benoit get that spot. That being said, he played perfectly fine for a third pairing guy tonight, right? Like, you can see him coming in playing, you know, 12, 13 minutes a night for 60 games, and that just being what it is. It's not probably the best, you know, unless there is a trade, there is probably not... it's probably not a great sign if he's playing 50, 60 games. But that being said, what he had, what he showed tonight was that he can do the thing they're going to ask him, which is to be a defense first, physical presence on the blue line in the penalty kill and at 5-on-5. He looked fine. Manson didn't look great. You know, that sucks. I'm going to move past that. Shattenkirk had the goal. I thought Shattenkirk actually looked pretty decent tonight. You know, he got involved when, took the hit on McTavish, and, you know, he looked like a leader tonight. It was nice to see. And
Shattenkirk's a lot better as a third option on the right side. It doesn't feel like that, like, where he's not relied upon as much, where Jamie Drysdale's coming in. It's funny to say, like, a 19-year-old defenseman is coming, taking the pressure off Shattenkirk, but he has. Like, Drysdale's coming in, taking the pressure off Shattenkirk to be the main guy, to be the offensive power play threat that they brought Shattenkirk actually in to be. Nobody expected Drysdale to be this good this quickly, where it almost gives Shattenkirk the freedom to have a little bit less responsibility and kind of just play his game. And I think he did that in this game. Whether that, you know, spans across the entire season, we'll see. And we don't even know if he's going to be with Pattern for the rest of the year, because Mahura was also a healthy scratch tonight, so that could be another guy who checks in. But I think it will do well for Shattenkirk to not have that responsibility and not be that guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we've seen from him, right? Like, he's always been at his best when he didn't need to be the guy, you know? He was in St. Louis. He was really good. Well, he played behind Alex Pietrangelo. So, you know, Alex Pietrangelo is your starting number one right D, especially at 25 years old. Like, that's not – there's no question about that. You know, he moves to Washington. He doesn't have a ton of success there. Fine, whatever. Well, then he goes up to New York, and in New York, it's like, oh, he's the guy. He's our big, you know, he's our one, and he's going to help fix us, and blah, blah, blah. Stanley Cups, here we come. And it's, no, not at all. He fizzles. Like, it just doesn't work for him. And they're asking him too much. They're putting him into, they're overusing him. They're overexposing him. He goes back down to Tampa Bay, and he looks really good because of all the guys ahead of him. And that's not a knock on him. It's about fit. It's about, you know, utilization. I mean, shit, that's where coaching comes in, right? That's where the coaching and the roster management comes in, which is you need to get guys to fit certain spots, and you need the coach to put those players in those spots within a context to succeed. And then at that point, it becomes about the players doing well. Last year, they asked too much of him, understandably so. I get what the idea was. It was a pipe dream. It was never going to happen. But I get it. This year, he moves down the lineup, and he looks pretty good tonight. And it's because there's guys ahead of him that just make more sense being higher up the roster, being asked to do more. Now, if Josh Manson can't figure this shit out, you know, he might be a top four defenseman. You know, it just is what it is. But, you know, I thought Fowler looked really good tonight at a couple of spots. I thought he looked engaged. He, you know, there was a couple of times on the penalty kill where I was a little less than happy with his, I guess I'll say his conservatism as far as pressing guys coming up from the corners and into the crease. You know, there was that one where the guy just took it right into the front.
Yeah.
And that's, you can't have that. You know, but he looked a lot closer to the guy that you want him to be, using his skating to break up plays, using his skating to move the puck, making good passes, getting the puck going from defense to offense quickly. There was some stuff that he did tonight that I thought was encouraging. But Hampus Lindholm and Jamie Drysdale are the two best defensemen on this team. Yep. Like, what are we even fucking talking about, man? Like,
everything's a non-factor after them. And like we said, Fowler looked pretty good. Shattenkirk looked pretty good. Pattern did kind of what you expect from him. Manson was kind of the lone, you know, dull spot on the blue line. Just, it's not that he looked awful. He just didn't look as great or as good as the other guys out there. And just, you know, I forget who made the comment on Twitter, but somebody said he looked rusty. I think that kind of sums it up there, right? He just didn't look like he was fully 100% ready to go. And it's got time. It's one game. You know, any of the good performances, just like the bad performance, preface all of them with, yeah, it's one game in the season so far, and there's 81 more games to go, and there's plenty of time for guys to cool down or guys to get better and heat up. And Manson's just as much a part of that as anybody else, and it's a big year for him. You know, we talked about Sam Steelhaupt being a big year. It's a big year for Manson. It's a big year for Raquel. Both of them are pending unrestricted free agents, and their future is up in the air, whether they're with Anaheim or with somebody else, you know, come trade deadline or the end of the year. So he has plenty of time and plenty of motivation to get back to his best and be the player that we expect from him. I just don't know if that's going to be with Cam Fowler, because the history states that Fowler-Manson as a pairing just doesn't work. I wouldn't split up Drysdale and Lindholm at this point. Nope. So, you know, is it Manson, Shattenkirk? Probably not. So there's not a lot of options for him and where he could slot in.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you talked about breaking up Hampus and Jamie and why this is not going to be what it is. And I think the thing that's fun about that pair specifically is, like, it passes every level of the test, right? Like, in your head, when you think about what a top pairing defense, a top defensive pair looks like, you go, ooh, you probably want one good guy who's a little bit more defense than offense and really strong two-way game, but he could skate and pass and all this shit. And then you want to have a guy who can really make the offense pop and really be aggressive and really get into it. And, like, you look and you're like, well, yeah, there's this 6'3", super smart, super defensively talented guy. And then, you know, what Jamie Drysdale is like, what, 6', 6'1"? Tiny little dude who just skates around all the time and just makes stuff happen on offense. And you're like, okay, cool, now let's try it out. And you put it on the ice and, like, you can see that it works, right? Like, there's going to be lapses because it's the first game. There's going to be lapses because they haven't spent a bunch of time playing together. There's going to be lapses because one of them is 19 years old. Yeah. Like, all of these things are true. But you can see the way in which these two players can form an incredibly cohesive top pair and an effective and dynamic top pair. And I think we talked about this a little bit. With Drysdale's skating, he is going to allow Lindholm to get more involved offensively. They mentioned it tonight on the broadcast for the Ducks that Lindholm has been shooting more. I personally think it's interesting and not at all related that he's a UFA at the end of the season. I don't think those two things are related, but I thought it was odd, so I'd mention it. But, you know, he's got talent, and if the forwards in front of him can do a little bit more offensively, it's going to create space for him to get more engaged. It's going to create space for him to maybe kind of improve that offensive part of his game that has statistically not really been there all the time.
Yeah, I think he is due for a better season, you know, not just offensively, but all around, especially if he's with Jamie Drysdale for most of the year. I hope that they can stick together for the majority of the season. I think it'll be good for both of them.
I hope they can stick together for the next 6 years.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about this already, and if you want to hear a full kind of breakdown on this, you know, I think of all the players that the Ducks have are pending UFAs coming up, I think the one player they should look at bringing back, if anybody, would be Hampus Lindholm, and a lot of that hinges on how that pairing looks this year with Jamie Drysdale and how they can kind of, you know, generate some chemistry going forward, because I think Hampus Lindholm is young enough that, you know, a potential future pairing of Lindholm and Drysdale can be a competitive one for the Ducks when they are back into the playoff hunt and back into contender status. I think, you know, Lindholm will still be a good player for the Ducks and a player who can contribute and be a good mentor for Jamie Drysdale and to kind of usher in the next wave of young Ducks defensemen that they have coming up in the pipeline. And so I think he would be the one guy that I would keep around. All right, I think that pretty much wraps it up. Was there anything you wanted to touch on before we wrapped up here? I think we got most of it.
Yeah, we got to pretty much everything. You know, it was cool tonight that Bowen Byram and Hendrix LaPierre both had their first career goals. LaPierre and McTavish obviously both got their first goals in their first game, which is really cool.
McTavish on his first shot.
I know me and you have, yeah, and I know me and you have talked about LaPierre a lot before, and how much it did kind of suck for him that he was this guy who, going into his draft year, looked to be a top 10 guy, but he had concussion issues, and there were questions about his ability to stay healthy. You know, kind of like Krebs the year before, and so to see him play well is nice, and especially for a team like Washington where they really just don't have any real young players to get excited about. You know, having a guy like LaPierre who can step into the lineup and just be a young player to provide a little bit of dynamism, a little bit of energy, a little bit of skating to a team that, from a roster perspective, could go stale just given how long everybody's been around.
Yeah.
You know, and on top of that, I think Alex Ovechkin had 2 goals tonight. So, you know, I think he jumped ahead of, like you said earlier, Marcel Dion on the list. And
4 points for him, too.
That's going to be a blast, man. Like, it's going to be so much fun to watch Ovechkin just spend the next couple of years chasing Gretzky's record. You know, with the league on ESPN in the States and TNT down here, like, there's a lot to be excited about right now as far as, you know, the number of young players in this league that are just dynamic from the jump, it feels like. And, you know, just the opportunity to get to watch more games on national television, I think, is going to be a lot of fun. So it's a good time to be a hockey fan, and it's the first game, so it always feels that way. But, you know, it's a good time.
All right. Well, to wrap up, we have another show that we're releasing. I think we're going to release it Friday to coincide with the Ducks game. So Steven and I sat down with Robin from, is it Jewels of the Crown?
Jewels from the Crown,
and yep. Alex from CBJ Cannon, and did a blind draft for the awards. It was a ton of fun. Steven put together basically 15 players for the Hart, Norris, and Vezina trophy. And it was just 4 obscure stats about each player without any of their names. And we just kind of had to draft them based off those stats. I did pretty well, so I'll take some credit for that. I did decent. But some of the teams that came together were fairly interesting. Some of the picks were pretty funny about some of the guys that were on there. I don't want to spoil too much because it was a lot of fun recording that one. But I think we're going to release that one on Friday, kind of earlier in the day before the Ducks game, so you guys can listen to that one and get some content before that game. We won't be doing a post-game show for Friday, so anybody who didn't see our post on Twitter and or just kind of hear our description that Steven and I went through on the mailbag episode, for this year we are moving away from post-game shows on a nightly basis or on a game-by-game basis to a more of a weekly structure. So we'll have a show every weekend, whether it be Saturday or Sunday, throughout the season, just kind of breaking down what has happened throughout the week. And then occasionally, like tonight, we'll have a few post-game shows throughout the season for big moments. So tonight was opening night, so we wanted to get out here and see you guys all again and kind of, you know, explain what's going on with the show moving forward, and then I would say probably about maybe 2-3 at most a month that we would aim to do a post-game show, but we just don't want to commit to anything just because we know how scheduling went last year and how tough it was to hit, you know, 75 to 80 games a season. You know, last year we were lucky we had the shortened season, but with all those games kind of sandwiched together, it was hard. So we just want to make sure we get kind of the best show for you guys, make sure we can get, you know, obviously Pat and Jay, who aren't here tonight, on a regular basis as well, because they're just as part of the show as we are. So we want them on as much as we can. So I think a weekly show kind of does that and hits everything that we're trying to do. So we will be live again on Sunday, I believe. Sunday afternoon is what we're aiming for. That's afternoon Pacific time with kind of our weekly breakdown. So Pat and Jay, I think, are both available for that one. So it'll be all four of us on that show, which will be a lot of fun. And then we'll kind of keep you guys updated moving forward on when the next few post-game shows are going to be. But every show will be live on Twitch. So even on the weekly shows, you'll be able to join us. Everything seemed to go well with the stream, which was a nice change tonight. So we'll be live on all of those shows as well. We'll make sure to update you guys on everything that's going on.
Yeah. You know, I two other things just to throw on there is I know me and Eddie had talked about it, and just to pimp ourselves a little bit, Eddie, I believe, is looking forward to being able to get back to doing some prospect recaps and just kind of see where people are. So hopefully that's the thing we put together for you guys on the website. And then I have Substack, and I'll be putting out all sorts of dumb crap on that. You can find it through our Twitter. But, you know, more than anything, join the Patreon, follow us on Twitter, talk to us. We, you know, we love to talk with everybody. We love making fun and having a good time and going back and forth about the same three jokes all over. So it's a lot of fun. We really do try to do as much fun as we can. I try to have as much fun as we can with doing this, because otherwise what the hell are any of us here for? And we're really excited about the season ahead, and we are optimistic that the format that we switched to is going to be the best experience for you guys, best experience for us, and, you know, give us a little bit of flexibility during the week to do some fun stuff as well. So, you know, yeah, that'll wrap it up for the
a lot of content coming.
Yeah,
like Steven said, I did forget about that, so good mentioning it. I am working on a prospect update, because most of the Ducks prospects are back playing now. So, you know, guys like Sasha Pustuyov has had a good start to Inkwell. Sam Colangelo got his first NCAA goal. So similar to the articles I put out last year at the Hockey Writer, just kind of a monthly or weekly update on the Ducks prospects. That will be going out on our website on forevermighty.com. So look for that to come hopefully by the end of this week. And then, as Steven said, yeah, our Patreon, we are making sure we hit content on that this year. For anybody that already is a Patreon subscriber, they know the struggles that we've had on getting consistent shows out there. But we have revamped our scheduling going along with the weekly shows, which means we can actually focus on the Patreon a little bit more and get some content on there. So we've got a Pucks and Brews planned for this month as well as a few other bonus shows that are going to go out in the Patreon. So if you do want to subscribe there, we do have a lot of fun bonus shows that go out on it. You can check us out at patreon.com/forevermighty. But appreciate you guys all joining us tonight. It was a lot of fun getting back out and interacting with everybody. The chat was lively tonight, which is always fun to see. So, you know, excited to be back for the beginning of another Ducks season. Great to kind of speak to everybody in the chat, and for everybody listening at home as well. You know, great to interact with you guys again at the beginning of the season. And we'll talk to you guys again on Sunday. Take care, everybody.
Later, bye.